Welcome back to The Gum Guru, the podcast that helps you separate fact from fiction when it comes to your gums, implants, and overall oral health. Brought to you by North Raleigh Periodontics and Implant Center. I'm your host, Lisa Bruff, and today we're talking about a question we hear all the time. Why would I need to see a periodontist? Isn't that just for people with really bad gum problems? Well, the truth is, periodontists don't just fix gum disease at the end stage. They treat a wide range of conditions, prevent serious problems before they start, and help keep your teeth and implants healthy for life. To break it down for us and explain why seeing a specialist can be a game changer for your oral health, we have Dr. Macon Singletary. If you've ever wondered what a periodontist actually treats or whether you might need to see one, today's episode is for you. Let's dive in, gum guru style. Well, good morning, Dr. Singletary. Let's start at the beginning. What is a periodontist and how is their training different from a general dentist?
Okay, well, in dentistry, we have like six or seven specialties, but a periodontist is one of them. You know, you got oral pathology, you got endodontist, you got orthodontist, you got prosthodontist, you know, oral surgeons. But periodontist, perio meaning round, dental tooth. When you go into dental school, you're gonna learn all the specialties. They take them through, but it's like they just expose you to it. And it's rare that you can be good at all of that. There's few general dentists that can do that. But when somebody decides this is what I want to focus my practice on, I grew up in a medical family. And I didn't want to go into medicine because my dad told me what was going to happen, you know, with insurance dictating how you treat patients. And he said, in dentistry, you're going to be able to have autonomy for a while. Now, I'm not going to tell you when he told me that, but it was years ago. And now dentistry is being affected by insurance companies and corporates taking over. And so the ability to have a solo practice and do what you want is becoming more difficult. But I wanted to specialize in something that had to do with not just oral health, but would affect systemic health too. There, in a normal patient, there's 28 teeth if you remove the wisdom teeth. And the surface area exposure to the cardiovascular system is the size of your hand. So every time you chew, you have these bacteria showers in the bloodstream. And so when my first day in class in perio, the professor, Dr. Fritz at Emory, he said, we had the gums are healthy lecture, and okay, that's cool. And then he did the gums are sick lecture, and all my colleagues were passing out, and I'm going, hey, that's cool. I want to learn more about that. And, he needed help doing research, and, I needed money, so I worked part-time for him, and he took me under his wing and taught me. And it just filled me with knowledge about not just oral health, but how does it affect the whole body, and that intrigued me because it wasn't cookie cutter necessarily, but in general dentistry it's problem focused mostly. You have a filling, you do a filling. You have a crown, you do it, you're done. Well, gum periodontal therapy, it's an ongoing issue, so you got to be able to. Once you get into it, understand not just, there's a problem in the mouth, but you gotta understand the medical history. You gotta, what's going on, not only with the gum tissue, but the upper jaw, lower jaw. I mean, it's a lot of things you gotta look at. So in order to learn that, you gotta go to school and, decide, okay, I wanna do this. So it's 2 to 3 years after dental school. And you got to be invested in it because it does take more time to get out.
It sounds like you learn a lot about systemic health.
Right.
And I think it's funny that if any of us have pets, like your dog or something, the vet will tell you have to have this dog's teeth cleaned or done this because the dog gets really sick. The dog gets really sick because its teeth are not well. And I think that sometimes as people, we don't understand that as well about our own mouth. We'll take our dog in for a $450, scaling and not necessarily take care of our own. But that, when you used to say that bacteria shower would go in your mouth and it goes all the way through your body down to your toes in like a really short period of time, I thought that is like kind of shocking how much that can affect your whole body's health. So, and you had like, you did even more than that. You did the dental school and you did 3 years afterwards. And didn't you do something else too?
So a specialty training, you know, 2 to 3 years. If you want to teach, you get a master's. And so you do some research and I went to UNC and Dr. McFall was chairman of the department and he didn't like Duke people, but he took me. anything that went wrong, it was my fault.
Yeah.
But I put him on my thesis committee because I didn't want him against me. I want him for me. But he made me rewrite my thesis like 3 or 4 times.
Wow.
But, you know, so if you want to teach, you know, there's the master's aspect of it. You can get a certificate. Well, you know, you take an exam at the end of your specialty training, be it oral surgery or endo, and that allows you to limit your practice to that specialty. Then the next step is become a diplomate, or where you actually treat patients, you document the treatment. And when I did it, we had to do 5 cases from beginning to end and document the treatment, why we did it, evidence-based treatment, you know, what was in the literature, you know, and that's the difference between, you know, a general dental education and going into a specialty program, because going into periodontics or in any specialty, you're going to dive into the literature. They're going to show you treatment that works and there's evidence that it works, not just the newest thing that comes out. We have so many implants that come out this day and age, and you know, everybody's jumping on it because it may be less expensive or some little twist, but they don't have a long-term studies that, on these implants, and people are using them, and they may not be the greatest thing since sliced bread. But in specialty training, you're going to learn what is the best treatment for what you're doing. And you have to, as a diplomate, you have to defend that. So treat 5 cases. You know, it's a little bit not as complicated now, but... And you have the written part, and you have the oral part, or case acceptance, and then you have the oral exam. So it took me 5 years. You have 5 years to do this, and then you become a diplomate. And what that means, I think I learned more in that 5 years doing my diplomate status than all of dental school, even the perio program, because you are working on patients, you're looking at the literature, you got to defend it in front of your peers. And why you do these procedures. And so you learn, you know, what may be appropriate or what may not be. And you carry that over into practice. And so then you add, experience to it. You know, there are things that I've seen over the years that I'm going, why are you doing this? For example, bovine bone for bone grafts. I mean, it sets up hard, it's great, but, they use it in Europe all the time. Well, I've seen bovine bone turn into concrete after 20 years. You've got implants in them, they fail.
Mm.
But so anyway, that training, most schools will definitely dive into it, and particularly in periodontal. I mean, we're pretty big on evidence-based therapy.
You know, that says a couple of things to me because, I've known you for years and I come here. One, that there's some things in the market now, I think, that concern people who have to go in and have things done to their teeth. One is that these general dentists that just do everything in-house. And a lot of it seems kind of like a sales pitch, sort of. It's all kind of canned, and it seems hard for one person to do so many different things. But they try to keep you in-house to do it there, so they keep the business. And they often give you very complicated or very expensive plans. But I've known you for years, and you really look at, as you were talking about the diplomate, you're really looking at the individual case. And often you will dial way back those plans and only, this is what you really need. This will make you healthy. This is what you could do extra if you want better, looks or something with it. But you're very conservative, and at the same time, you really address the root problem. And I think that's one of the reasons I would see this, your office, is because not only do you have all that training, but you're conservative in the treatment and you're looking to what needs to be done. And it's not like a package sales, because there's a lot of competition between all these dental offices. And nowadays trying to keep everything in house so that they take all of it. And I don't think that you get as good a care. I think because you do consider a lot of different things about the patient's whole health, questions that aren't even asked in your general dentist office, and often cost you less. I think people think it's going to cost more, but I think often when people come here, they end up paying a lot less and getting much better treatment that considers their whole health and their whole plan. That's just my take on it. But okay, first reason people need a periodontist is gum disease. Can you explain the different stages of gum disease and why seeing a specialist early can save teeth and maybe even your overall health?
So, you know, piggyback on your comment, you know, I don't do fillings and restorations, but because I'm objective about that. And so I do work hand in hand with the dentist, and I may send a report to them. You know, if a patient needs a filling, I'll say, this is where you should go. But it's important to know that there are options to treatment. And we live a day and age where, you know, you can get second opinions. And doing that's a wise thing to do. I mean, I always treat patients if it were my mouth. You know, I had a lady the other day, she had advanced periodontal disease, 35 years old, and she went to a dentist office and they said, well, you should take your teeth out, do all 4 or 6 implants, upper and lower. And I'm going, she's losing these teeth due to periodontal disease. Fortunately, she wanted a second opinion. She Googled us and saw and came in based upon the Google review. And I said, look, you know, these teeth are savable. This is what's going to happen. Over time, I've been able to see what happens with treatment. And so I can't predict the future for people, but I can tell them, you're 35 years old, you've got moderate to advanced bone loss, you're losing these teeth due to periodontal disease, you're going to lose implants. But, you know, so this, you're talking about staging. That's important to understand. A stage 4 in a 35-year-old is not good long term, but you know, she hadn't had her teeth cleaned since she was 18. You know, getting somebody, if they walk through my front door, they pass the first test to want to find out what's going on. And then the second thing is I blend 3 things. I blend the oral exam, the x-rays, and the medical history. And then I'll come up with a thought. And what they tell me, this lady had, she actually had braces when she was 16. She had a bad experience and they took the braces off. And anyway, she never went back. But staging, there's, you know, gingivitis. You know, somebody asked me, is periodontal disease reversible? Gingivitis is. But once the bone's gone, it's gone. It will not grow back. And the ramifications of that, and, you know, and I'm sensitive to aesthetics. You know, periodontists generally are. And so with treatment, the gums are going to shrink a little bit. So being able to tell a patient, you know, this is what's going to happen, you know, unless you do this all the time, the ramifications of treatment may not be discussed with the patient like it should be, you know, but you got early, moderate, and severe. So your gingivitis is stage 1, early stage 2, 3 is moderate, and severe is stage 4. So they stage it and then they grade it. And grading is based upon medical history, based upon do they smoke. You know, the medical history is so key in periodontal treatment that sometimes it gets overlooked. Medications you're taking, how does it affect how you heal? You know, those aspects of treatment that goes into the, you know, the old computer and, you know, spits out. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, will artificial intelligence take over treatment? I said, no way. You know, stupid information in, you get stupid information out. You know, you got to have a human being there putting the appropriate information in. And yeah, it can help with diagnosis. We have the Pearl AI. And before, it interprets x-rays and bone loss, you know, the amount of bone loss. And it does pretty good with that, but also we'll look at decay. And I spend more time now checking for decay, and periodontists do check for decay, even though we don't do the fillings, we check decay. We have to. And but it'll show false positives all over the place. And I'm spending more time looking for a false positive where I'm looking at, that's not decay, but the Pearl AI says there's decay there. I have to check it out.
Right, right. You have to go look at it. So if to catch it early, we're looking at, so stage 1, you said it's like gingivitis. And what are we seeing in our mouths at that stage?
So bleeding, puffy gums, bleeding. Your immune system, the first line of defense are your neutrophils, and they engulf the bacteria, kill it, and split. Now, the bacteria is pretty smart. They make a proteinaceous matrix that protects it. And from our immune system, eventually the white blood cells penetrate it. But when they do, that those enzymes come out, destroys the bacteria, you know, it just eliminates it. And the products that come out, the inflammatory mediators, get in the bloodstream. That's what affects your heart and bone metabolism. But the capillaries will dilate. And once they dilate, it brings more blood to the area, so the gums get puffy and red, and they bleed. So that's an acute response. You know, some people, like smokers, nicotine's an anti-inflammatory. Now, don't go around smoking just think you're going to get rid of the inflammation. But you know, you smoke, you're not going to have your inflammation, your gingivitis will go away. What will happen is it becomes chronic. That's a lymphocyte response. And it may not, I mean, the gums may get fibrotic and thick and you don't see it. That's why it's got to be examined, because if it hurts, it's like high blood pressure and glaucoma. It's curtains. You know, you don't want it to hurt. If it starts to bleed and it's puffy, yeah, you need to get looked at. You know, if you're going after and it's not going away after 2 or 3 days, you know, come in our office and we'll do an exam for you. You may be early and it's treatable and you keep it simple.
I know you also have a microscope or so that tells you what types of bacteria are actually present. I think probably that's something general dentistry doesn't normally have. And so you can identify the types of bacteria, because some, I guess, are more dangerous to your overall health than others. And some are easier to address. But also when you address the bacteria, you're able to not use broad spectrum, but to lock in on the exact bacteria that are causing your problem. I think that's another thing that differentiates this practice. And that was really interesting, because you did that study on me. It was super interesting to see what was in my mouth. I was glad to see there wasn't even dementia ones like floating around.
Yeah, the spirochetes.
Although sometimes people in my family may think. So that's first. What happens in second and third? Geez, we're already in trouble after one.
Right. So, you know, when patients come in, no, we're not going to, artificial intelligence is not going to take over. Yes, they can interpret the x-rays. But as I said, I blend the medical history, the x-rays, and the oral exam, the upper jaw, lower jaw. If a person is 50 years old, you know, I will look at the x-rays and I'll say, well, 50% of the adult population above the age of 30 has some form of bone loss. They show that. 75% above the age of 60. So if a patient comes in, I always like to do this. They have the x-rays up there, and I don't look at their age. And I'll look up there, and I'll tell them, you know, you got to blend these three things. Artificial intelligence, they say, we're going to do away with the probe. No, we're not going to do away with the probe. You got to use that instrument to check the gingival tissue, space between the tooth and the gum. Is it bleeding? And I do photographs. I do bacterial sampling. I do DNA analysis. But I can just look at the x-ray and the patient tell me, well, like the other day, well, she's 35 years old, history of ortho. Now, you don't do braces in people with inflamed gum tissue. She told me, well, my gums were inflamed when they did it and they were tender. That was red flag number one. You know, she had braces moving teeth through inflamed gum tissue. She's 35 years old. And so when I looked at the x-ray, I didn't want to tell her she had the mouth of a 60-year-old. But I have people come in and there's very little bone loss and they're 80 years old. I say, you got a mouth of a 45-year-old. And they're just leaping for joy. But you know, so it's the information that I see that I can tell a person that is 80 and very little bone loss and say, God, can you put an implant there? And if he doesn't smoke, is periodontally stable, and there's not a medical compromise, and it's good width, height, and depth of bone. If he wants an implant, it will work pretty good for him. An implant a 35-year-old with that amount of bone loss?
Not going to work. Which brings us to, it's North Raleigh Periodontics and Implant Center. So implants is another thing that periodontists do. And what makes the periodontist the go-to specialist for implants? And why is proper planning and maintenance so critical for long-term success?
Well, just as I mentioned, you know, it's easy for a patient to come in like this individual and they say, oh yeah, we take these teeth out, put 6 implants in, bridge upper, bridge lower, $50,000 worth of treatment. And the medical history, you know, she did smoke. You know, she had history of braces. She had bone loss of a 65-year-old. She had moderate to severe periodontitis. If you're losing a tooth due to periodontal disease, you're going to lose an implant.
And so that's a lot of money to lose.
Right, definitely. And so even with implants, you know, and anybody can do an implant. It used to be very Brandemark, who started the Nobel implants in the 70s, was very, he did his surgeries in the operating room, sterile environment. Well, the most unsterile environment is your mouth. And so finally they figured it out that you don't need to be in an operating room to do implants. So the pendulum swung from being sort of only special people, you know, the oral surgeons that can work in a hospital, to anybody can do it. But as Paradox, we'd look at the surrounding structures of the tooth. We looked at the whole aspect of the patient. So yes, you can put an implant in. What is it going to be there 10 years from now? And then once you put it in, how do you take care of it? People come in, how many times they have implants put in somewhere else? And not that, I mean, it looks good, it's doing fine, it's bleeding maybe. Or I ask them, what causes gum disease? They can't tell me. Why are you know, how many times a day you floss and brush? Once. You know, why did you do an implant? I mean, did not somebody tell you how to brush and floss that? You know, a periodontist is going to tell you how to take care of that implant. And if it fails, how to treat it. There's so many ways that, of treating failing implants. If you get a little bit of bone loss and it's still stable, you know, I've had some people come in, they tell me to take the implant out because there's bone loss. Well, no, not necessarily. If it's integrated, treatment can be done. But being able to interpret the medical history, interpret, you know, their past history with, you know, did they have braces? How often did they get to teeth clean? You know, how many times a day did they brush or floss? Sometimes taking a patient from, I'm flossing once a day, the guy the other day, I would floss once a week, I brush two times a day. I said, okay, well, let's change this narrative, put you on antibiotic, get you back in 2 weeks, and let's see if the inflammation around that implant goes away. Just because there's bone loss there doesn't mean you need to take it out. So the Paradox is going to be able to interpret that because we do that all day long. I mean, general dentists could do that too, but when somebody's doing this all day long, they specialize in looking at the gum tissue and bone and the medical history and what's involved in it, they're going to be able to tell that patient a little bit more succinctly what will work and not work.
And give you a good course of treatment that's more appropriate. Right. Whereas, yeah, it seems like a much better deal. Another big reason people need a periodontist is complex cases with gum recession, bone loss, or bite problems. What kind of procedures or treatments are typically involved, and what results can patients expect? That's a loaded question. Yeah. There's an awful lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
But I mean, but those are other things that you treat, the gum recession, the bone loss, and the bite problems. Yeah. And so how is your specialty like address these issues?
Yeah, so even in my specialty, there's a different approach to doing this. But the things that I look at, you know, you're correct. You know, what causes recession to begin with? There's dystrophic gum disease, non-dystrophic. Inflammatory, non-inflammatory. Inflammatory gum disease, bacteria, your immune system reacts to it. If you have thin gum, all right, and there's bone loss due to the inflammation, you're going to get a long tooth, okay? That's from inflammatory gum. You got to address the inflammation, and then you look at, is there bone in front of the tooth? Is the gum thick or thin? And is there the bite, the occlusion against the tooth? So you check the occlusion. Is there bone there? Is the gum thick or thin? If it's thin bone, you know, no bone on the front of the tooth, thin gum, and it's traumatic, you eliminate the trauma, then you look at, is this going to continue? Thin gum tissue with inflammation, you got to get the inflammation under control. You can have thin gum tissue with a little bit of barrier and it's healthy, and you can watch that. As long as you got that thin barrier of keratinized tissue like the palate, so white or pink. Inflammatory gum disease, if you have thick gum, you're going to get a pocket. You're going to get space. I'd much rather have a pocket because I can treat the root surface and get the gum back on it and regenerate using laser therapy and treatment that way. If it's thin gum, no bone, and it's recession, I've got to get the gum somewhere to stop that further recession. I use autogenous tissue, the patient's own tissue. You have donor tissue, dermal and epidermal grafts. I don't like them because they shrink, and a lot of people do that because it's from somebody else. I just don't like the way it looks. And so I don't do necessarily, you know, like the whole mouth. You know, some people do that, and they'll use the dermal tissue. Sort of a travesty because, A, why are you doing it? You know, because most of the time when people come in with second opinions and they want to do the pinhole technique, which is covering the root surfaces, they're doing it because there's recession. But there is keratinized tissue there, or tissue, that border tissue that won't cause recession. If you look at the bite, make sure it's good, you won't get further recession. Keep the inflammation low. You don't need to cover that root. Now, if it's an aesthetic issue, yeah. I mean, if somebody has a big smile and they say, well, I got recession, I don't like that, yeah, I can justify covering the root and the ways of doing it. But it varies from person to person, you know, their wants and desires. People come in, did you know you need a graft? No. Was it bothering you? No. So my dentist said, I need grafts. And I said, and I'm looking in there, and I said, no, you don't, because you got that barrier tissue. You know, your oral hygiene's good. You're going to be, you know, just stay on a good maintenance program, do your thing four times a day. You'll be fine. Sometimes they come in, and yes, you need one here and one here, but not the full mouth.
Wow. There's a lot more to it. Lastly, there are patients who might not even have obvious symptoms, but still benefit from specialized care. Can you talk about preventative reasons to see a periodontist, such as for people with a family history of gum disease, maybe systemic health risks or prior dental trauma?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good point. I think this day and age, we're more aware of our health. You know, you can chat GPT anything now, and it tells you some of it may be accurate and some of it's not. But, you know, having a periodontist evaluate you, I mean, we're going to be objective. You know, a periodontist doesn't do fill-ins. He's not a periodontist if he's doing fill-ins. So if you specialize, you're limiting your practice to taking care of the surrounding structures of the teeth, the gum tissue and bone. But that involves the systemic health. It involves looking at the x-rays and, you know, the medical history. And then when somebody comes in, you know, if they have a concern, they may say, yeah, I mean, getting an exam by a periodontist, you know, he may get a clean bill of health, get your teeth cleaned twice a year. You know, if there's a, you know, you don't, there are four kinds of patients that I see. Good teeth, good gums, maybe for implants or gum grafts. You know, if somebody comes in and they're healthy and their teeth are hard as rocks, you know, they just need to get the teeth cleaned twice a year. We clean teeth. You know, I don't do fill-ins and restorations. Be glad to. But that we find in a general dental office, you know, if they want to pick somebody that lives close to them. You know, I have people coming from Virginia. We got one guy coming, wants to come from Massachusetts, wants me to do an implant on him. I'm like, just stay up there. You got periodontists up there that can do it. But then soft teeth, good gums, people who are susceptible to decay, and they need to stay in contact with their general dentist. Sometimes I'll see once a year, and they'll see their general dentist once a year. You know, they're getting their teeth cleaned twice a year because they're not susceptible to gum disease. Then there's the bad gums, good teeth. They see me all the time, unless they fire me on the right arm of the dentist. If they want to get alternate, we alternate. But, you know, our patients come in. I've been doing this a long time, so I got a recall program. People have been coming every 3 months, you know, because the bacteria grows back within 30 minutes, have your teeth clean, it's growing back. It takes 6 to 8 weeks to grow into an area deeper than 3 millimeters, or 2 months. So people who are susceptible, getting their teeth clean four times a year is more appropriate, or every 3 months. I have a few that come every 2 months. For some reason, they grow the plaque, they're not getting it off, and they need more frequent cleans. But most of the time, every 3 months is good if they're flossing and brushing 4 times a day. Then there's the bad teeth, bad gums. That's your bless your heart group. Not only are you susceptible to decay, but you're susceptible to gum disease. And that group, you know, is just, feel sorry for them. But, you know. And I work with general dentists or prosthodontists to help them, A, get their gum tissue health under control, maintain them on a good maintenance program, but then they need the restorative backup. And then you have to decide, you know, okay, they're susceptible to decay, are we going to do bridge work? You know, can we get the gum tissue healthy enough that they can do implants? Implants don't decay, so it could be an option for some people.
Wow. One of the things I like about when I come here is that you have that airflow one.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had that in any of the other dentist's office I've ever been in. But that thing is so great for a cleaning because the water temperature is warm, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have that needle-like effect, so it doesn't hurt. I mean, it's just the nicest experience. And honestly, my teeth feel really super smooth afterwards. And they don't usually. I mean, I've done it at the dentist office, and I always have this rough feeling in the back of my teeth. But that machine and your clinicians get the teeth just super clear. It's just such a great experience, too. So, I mean, I think even that, having that sort of specialty thing, I haven't seen that in other practices either. Just to come in and have The cleaning and have the evaluation here is worth it, even if you've got, I think I hardly have one of the good people, good teeth, good gums. I think they're, I've been lucky that way. But I do the 4 times a day brushing, sometimes only 3, but I'm close.
Yeah, the xylitol is, the airflow is xylitol and erythritol. And those are your natural sugars that kill bacteria and they polish. And it's important to have that. It's an investment, but it's important, particularly if they're implants, because you don't want to pumice, which is what general dentists do most of the time when they polish teeth.
Right.
It's abrasive. And if you have implants, you want the airflow. It doesn't abrade the tooth. And plus, the erythritol or melts the cell wall, the bacteria kills it, and it polishes, and it is kinder to you.
Yeah, I really like that. It's really good. For someone who's nervous about seeing a periodontist, what would you want them to know about the experience? Is it painful? Is it intimidating? Or more routine than most people expect?
You know, it's when people come in, I think, you know, ignorance is not bliss. You know, it's giving patients information when they first come in, what is going to happen. I have people come in and in tears, and by the time they're done, and you know, I think I can give them some hope, because they can see what they have been doing, and then if they do it, you know, they're going to get better. So is it painful? I believe, you know, if somebody's uncomfortable, just raise your left hand. That means bug off. You know, don't raise your left hand when I walk in the room. You know, give me a chance. But, you know, we're very sensitive. I got very staff that's very aware of patients' comfort. And there should be no significant pain involved other than the initial, we'll have a little pinch here, and then you're going to be numb and you shouldn't feel anything. But communication is a big thing. So, and people come in very apprehensive. And, you know, their blood pressure is elevated, you know, their heart's beating fast. And I'm one of those. When I was 8 years old, it took 3 of them to hold me down. Yeah. And I didn't go back till I was in dental school. Yeah. Figure that one out. But it's about just knowledge more than anything. I think once patients understand it, after they come in, after the first appointment, say we do the root planing, I call that the 5-iron, my golf bag of treatment options. Some people dive right into, you know, the Big Bertha, you know, the laser protocol right off the bat. Yeah, and, I mean, one is they're not sure, you know, of the patient's habits. Are they going to maintain plaque removal? And they're doing an upper-level procedure that's expensive. And, yeah, it may be sore afterwards. That patient, yeah, they did the Lanat procedure all over my mouth, and I was sore. And, you know, and they had not to floss for 6 months. And I'm going, that's crazy. And you know, the problem's right back.
Right.
And it
right.
was painful. So taking one bite at a time, you know, that's the best way to do it. And patients, you get their confidence, and then when you do have upper level procedures, yeah, we have ways of making people comfortable. We have nitrous oxide, you know, we can do by mouth sedation. You know, so there are ways of making, and I think IV sedation is overblown for real major cases. You know, that can be done, and we can have somebody come in to do that. But I've been doing this a long time, and I've only had one. I used to do IV sedation. I don't do it anymore because I don't need to.
Right. Well, you've got a great bedside manner. And also some of your offices, I love how the chair faces out into this beautiful woods, and there's the birds there and the bird feeders. And it's just a really serene. It's not like being in a sterile office staring at some poster on the ceiling all the time. I mean, it's very, very relaxing atmosphere. I think your staff is lovely, and they make you feel very comfortable at the same time. And so I think all of that together, too, just the relaxation, and you take your time and you explain what's going on, which is really, really nice, you know, so you don't feel intimidated by it. And if I've ever like had any discomfort at all with a cleaning or something like this, you know, it's like I just have to say something. But the cleanings are so comfortable here. It's unbelievable.
Thank you for saying that.
Very, very comfortable. So how often should someone see a periodontist if they have a history of gum disease, implants, or risk factors?
Yeah, so twice a year is usually not enough. And we can alternate. You know, so there's some patients that we see them every 3 months and we alternate, see us twice, them twice. There's some who are very advanced in nature. They see the dentist once a year, us 3 times a year. Some of them, the bad teeth, good teeth, bad gum group, they're here pretty much all the time. And because we check decay, as I said, I don't do fillings and restorations. But if you have a susceptibility to periodontal disease, once or twice a year is not enough. You go through initial treatment, it classifies you as a periodontal patient. I'm not saying, laser therapy. I'm just saying maybe just deep cleaning, whether you use a little anesthetic, that qualifies you as a periodontal patient. And so 3 times a year, every 4 months, some people 4 times a year.
And some people kind of just live here, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. 5 big reasons why seeing a periodontist isn't just for emergency cases. From preventing gum disease to supporting implants, treating bone loss, and keeping your smile healthy for life, periodontists play a key role in overall oral health. Huge thanks to you, Dr. Singletary, for helping us understand exactly what periodontists do and why early intervention can make all the difference. So if you've been putting off specialized care, now is the time to schedule an evaluation with your True North of Periodontics, North Raleigh Periodontics and Implant Center. Visit NorthRaleighPerio.com to learn more. And don't forget to follow the Gum Guru for more practical, evidence-based tips to keep your gums healthy and your smile bright. Don't forget, brush 4 times a day. Until next time, keep those gums healthy.